don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I got a short but really good quick read today. This is another one that was published quite a while ago, but I think is finally becoming extremely relevant to a lot of technologies that are happening today, that we're finally seeing come to fruition, where basically when this was published, it was essentially a pipe dream in the idea that the technology was possible, but there was nowhere that it could actually be done. And this is written by Nick Szabo, so we're hitting another one of his many amazing pieces. This one you can find on NakamotoInstitute.org, as well as his blog, unenumerated.blogspot.com. And I've got plenty of his work we've read in the past. Both of these locations are great places to find work that he has done. With that, I do want to say, again, I missed an episode yesterday. I think at least for a while, probably through the holiday season, and then until I get into a new process, I don't think I'm going to be able to keep this up as a daily podcast. So this will probably be moving to maybe 2-3 days a week, depending on what I can manage, because I think I'm going to move. I'm going to take one step back from the podcast and start working more, put more focus on videos and the other work that I'm doing. So I'm still going to be working a lot on all of this stuff. I just think rather than working exclusively on the podcast episodes, I think it makes more sense at this point, since we've got such a batch of stuff under our belt, to make the older stuff more available to people, so that they can find it, like get the website looking clean and easily searchable and organized by all different categories and authors and that kind of stuff, which I've really been putting off. Now that we're on anchor.fm, I don't think that should be such a headache anymore. I think that can actually happen, because I don't expect to change my platform again. Good Lord, fingers crossed, I hope not. And then also I want to focus on the work with Mastering Bitcoin and some of the major long reads that will take away from the show as well. Because there are a number of other, like, larger projects that I want to have available in audio that I'm kind of really excited about. But again, you know, it's really hard to do a podcast episode and then a long read and then a video. You know, there's only so much time in a day, and I'm doing a whole bunch of other stuff as well. So just a heads up, make sure you're following me on Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy, and you're checking out CryptoEconomy.life. I'll probably periodically just update an episode of the podcast just so everybody knows what I have released on those other platforms, but it might not always, following the podcast might not be the best way to keep up with every single thing that's going on. I'll try to make it so that, you know, everything's visible and all the information is out there. But don't forget to check out CryptoEconomy.life and the Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy. Okay, with no more delay, we will jump into Nick Szabo's piece, and this was published all the way back in 1998 on his blog, and now it is up on NakamotoInstitute.org. It is Nick Szabo's piece entitled Confidential Auditing. So let's jump in. Confidential Auditing by Nick Szabo, originally published in 1998. The auditing function is a vast and indispensable part of the modern economy. Auditing controls allow, among other things, employers to delegate resources and authority to employees, franchisers to delegate to franchisees, stockholders to delegate to management, advertisers to count eyeballs, marketers to gather more reliable data on customers, and make possible a wide variety of other such relationships. auditing controls might fairly be called the security protocols of capitalism. A recent general survey showed that 83% of Americans are, quote, very concerned about their privacy on the internet. One can expect even stronger figures from European customers who have more firsthand experience with private data, much of it originally compiled for innocuous reasons, being used for political repression. Businesses recognize the shortcomings of NDAs and are looking for more reliable ways to protect confidential data. The vast majority of e-commerce customers are concerned about privacy. Auditing is in deep conflict with efforts towards greater privacy. Auditors have an ethic of recording, investigating, and reporting as much as possible, and often see privacy efforts as attempts to prevent auditing and potentially cover up fraud. Indeed, the recent multi-billion-dollar failures of Barings Bank and the long-term capital hedge fund, and more generally the recent problems with crony capitalism, which have shorn stockholders and creditors of over $1 trillion, have been ascribed to such secrecy. At the top of the list of current IMF reforms is, quote, openness, a buzzword for the introduction of greater auditing controls and reporting requirements. Since auditing controls are used to secure trillions of dollars of transactions every year, they are not going away, and indeed will likely grow more effective and intrusive. On the other hand, we now have at our disposal the many breakthroughs achieved over the last two decades in modern cryptography. Can we use these to strike a better balance between auditing and privacy? I have come up with an architecture which uses such protocols to greatly improve this trade-off: confidential auditing. We can achieve auditing logs unforgeable after commitment via secure timestamps. We can then achieve, to a great extent, unforgeability prior to commitment, with segregation of duties via multi-party integrity constraints. We then audit these commitments via multi-party private computations. This combination allows a wide variety of transactions, conducted with normal efficiency, to be observed and verified by selected arbitrators or auditors via more expensive private computations applied to randomly sampled commitments. This maintains a high degree of confidentiality for the inputs. The participants in this mutually confidential auditing protocol can verify that the books match the details of transactions stored in a previously committed transaction log, and that the numbers add up correctly. The participants can compute summary statistics on their confidentially shared transaction logs, including cross-checking of the logs against counterparties to a transaction, without revealing those logs. They only learn what can be inferred from the statistics. They can't see the details of the transactions. Assuming many practical details I have glossed over in this sketch, such as the efficiency of auditing computations, the availability of digital transaction records in standard format, etc., confidential auditing can bring a substantial improvement over current practices. Currently, the details of all an organization's transactions, including, for example, medical records in an HMO and transactions in top-secret government programs, are either exposed directly to auditors or are immune from auditing, allowing fraud. With mutually confidential auditing, we will be able to gain high confidence in the factuality of counterparties' claims and reports without revealing, identifying, and other detailed information from the transactions underlying those reports. This will provide the basis for solid reputation systems and other trusted third-party systems that maintain integrity across time, communications, summarization, and preserve confidentiality for transaction participants. With confidential auditing, we will often be able to have both openness and privacy. All right, and that was Nick Szabo's short proposal on confidential transactions, confidential auditing, again published in 1998 on his blog. And it's funny, for something that seemed so, I mean, this was a huge stretch in 1998. I mean, the protocol, the what he laid out specifically, was certainly possible. Like, it was technologically possible at that time. I mean, Bitcoin was technologically possible at that time, but the details of such a system had never been worked out. And to, I mean, think about the complexity of trying to actually implement something like this into the legacy financial system to get adoption of this on a wide scale. I mean, he even says that the practical details that he has glossed over in this sketch, such as the efficiency of auditing computations, and the availability of digital transaction records in a standard format. It's funny that, like that would be an incredibly difficult hurdle to overcome in the legacy financial system, but having basically flipped that entire concept on its head in Bitcoin and started from the foundation, like, now everything built on top of Bitcoin has a perfect standard transaction format. So much so that it would all have to be able to be settled on the Bitcoin blockchain. So that problem has actually been solved, a standard format for digital transaction recording, which is Bitcoin. That's what the Bitcoin system is, a standard for digital transaction records, one that also has a built-in provable or verifiable and defensible monetary policy built into it with its own currency. I mean, it's just utterly fascinating how those two problems essentially were solved. And now we're actually seeing exactly this type of concept come to fruition, and not only come to fruition, in actually see the light of day in a far more private and computationally secure way. Like, I mean, the Liquid sidechain is a great example. You have on-chain Bitcoin reserves that you can essentially test all of this against, and all transactions on the Liquid sidechain are confidential transactions. They have zero knowledge mathematical proofs attached to them. So we can do all of this auditing entirely confidential, and we don't even need individual, like, segmented, like, basically, as far as I'm understanding when I read this, the confidential auditing paper by Nick Szabo, is it was a basically a tree of individual, like, micro audits that could come together and prove a broader audit and commitments to previous audits. So integrity could be consistently re-upped, quote-unquote, over time by referring to previous audits at a smaller scale. Sort of like a Merkle tree-style aggregation of audits, so that privacy can be preserved by segmenting out all these different individual auditing elements and computations, but never having to compromise the overall validity of all the numbers adding up in the long run. Now, I could be a little bit misunderstanding what he was trying to explain, but that's kind of what I got out of it as far as, like, the general idea. But we actually have today, the actual mechanisms are far better since we have Bitcoin to build off of. Wasabi Wallet is another great example that doesn't need the added computation of Liquid Network, but does it by aggregation. By rather than having explicit input to output transactions, you have 1,000 inputs to 1,000 outputs, and aggregation of essentially signatures, so that it's not explicitly known which input is going to which output. It's arbitrary. As long as the numbers add up, we know that there's no fraud going on. We know that the auditing is perfect, and therefore no one is cheating the system. And even more fascinating is, as that technology is better adopted and we get real signature aggregation, like Schnorr and other proposals, maybe BLP, depending on the direction of development moving forward. Regardless, there are signature aggregation schemes like BLP and Schnorr that would make the confidential aggregated transactions not compromise the auditability and openness of it at all, but make it economically more efficient to use the privacy option, which is just fascinating that we've actually crossed that barrier. There's this, because there's always been a massive trade-off between openness and privacy, which the very concept of confidential auditing begins to bridge that gap, but then also between privacy and the amount of computation and economic cost going into it. Privacy has always been a greater economic cost. So there's been no core economic incentive to have the private option. And when it's actually about saving money and being more efficient, gets you that privacy, it completely changes the dynamic. There's no longer now being, there's a double-edged negative as far as not being private. It's costing you more and destroying your privacy without assisting in transparency. You can already have the openness of the system in a more efficient way without compromising privacy. And it undermines a trade-off that is practically always been present. I don't ever know of a situation in which the more private option could possibly be cheaper. I think in the long-term battle for privacy, I think that's a game changer. I think that crossing that barrier is a revolutionary step in actually sustaining long-term and making privacy widespread in the digital world, something that we have almost completely lost these days. I mean, you can be quote-unquote private on the internet. All you have to do is pay for a VPN and connect to it through Tor and have six browser plugins that mix up your computer fingerprint and make sure you don't use any of the main browsers and run an open source operating system where nothing really works with it, but you can just set up these virtual environments through your terminal and run these commands and it will run the program. And if it crashes every once in a while, just reboot your computer. And, you know, like the headache of actually gaining that degree of privacy, which is still not insured. There's still so many elements of do you really have it? Like what there's still degrees of trust in all of that, and it's such a headache today. So crossing that barrier into having the least cost in actually having privacy, like I said, I think that's revolutionary, even though it kind of just happened quietly. We just kind of reached the point where that technology was there, and it's still not implemented. It's still not something that's widely available. But I think we've crossed that barrier, or at least we're right on the verge of that being available. I mean, we still don't have Schnorr and BLP implemented, but it's there. It's like people are working on it, and there is a clear trend in that direction. And when that hits a standard wallet that can just be downloaded and implemented, I think that's going to deeply change the nature of the game. Because that's an important element of when privacy is an enormous extra cost in order to maintain in a world where essentially information is free, you end up in a situation where only 3% or 5% of the people even know how to maintain their privacy and then go that extra mile in order to achieve that privacy. And then suddenly there's this giant spotlight on that 3% of people or whatever it is of, you know, why are you going out of your way to maintain privacy? What do you have to hide? And, you know, it's like, why are you shutting the door to your bathroom? What are you smoking cocaine with your bunghole? Like what awful thing are you doing that, you know, you won't just let me watch anything and everything that you do in your life? When essentially information and surveillance is so ubiquitous, it flips a basic human rights dynamic in the reverse direction of what is natural. It puts the burden of proof on people to try to explain why they want a space and a family or relationship where they can be completely themselves, as opposed to the burden of proof of someone else why should they get to see anything? Why, like, if I don't want you, it's not about whether or not I have something to hide. It's about whether or not I have something that I want you to see. And that's a basic human rights issue, and it's a terrible, terrible thing that we have lost that. We did a recent episode on privacy. I mean, I guess it wasn't too recent. It was probably 20, 30 episodes ago. I think it was The Importance of Privacy or something. I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes. But the guy did a TED Talk that was discussed in the actual article we read, and talked about how people on YouTube filmed without knowing they were being filmed, and to see the moment when they realized what was happening. And it was all fun and games in the video, but he talked about that moment of, like, embarrassment, where these people are just singing, you know, by themselves in their house or doing something really silly, just 100% being themselves because they thought they had privacy. And then that moment of utter shame and embarrassment where they turned and looked at everything they had been doing for the last 10 minutes because they realized there was a camera in the room or someone was watching them, is, like, privacy is fundamental to being an individual. If you don't have privacy, then you are just a reflection of what everyone else is expecting of you, because you'll act as you expect other people would want you to act. You won't do something embarrassing. You won't be who you actually are. And I think that's detrimental to the human element of everything. I think it creates a gross standard of conformity and social pressure in situations that prevent people from being who they are. And so privacy has always been a giant, giant concern and interest of mine. And confidential auditing is such a fascinating concept. And it's just beautiful to see that we're reaching the point where this is reality, where, we've got, how many people are in the liquid sidechain? There's like 13 major exchanges, I think. I could have that number wrong, that are running a sidechain of Bitcoin with complete proof of reserve and zero knowledge proofs that there is no fraudulent actions happening with transactions between these exchanges or their users, but the details and specific owners and parties to these transactions are not known. It's open, it's transparent, and it's private. And I just think these things are game changers. That's why I constantly watch Wasabi Wallet and Schnorr Signatures and Tumblebit and the Breeze Wallet by Stratus and Zero Link and a number of other different aggregation schemes. I think I actually posted on Twitter once about, like, my dream is that every single block, there will be a day when we actually get a decentralized form of aggregating transactions. And every Bitcoin block is essentially a 1 megabyte or, 2.5 megabyte weight, whatever it is, the block weight, is essentially one giant aggregated transaction with a single Schnorr signature, where nobody actually knows what input is going to what output. And we have full 100% privacy, except when someone explicitly wants to make the cost to have some additional layer of transparency. And it is openness that is the extra cost, which sets incentives right, where someone who has a reason to, prove a better reputation or something in being open can pay that extra cost to say, look, I'm putting my reputation on the line and I am paying the extra cost to prove to you in a even greater degree of transparency that no fraudulent activity or my specific reserves are in fact mine. An extra degree of proof and openness that burden of cost is on the person who is trying to benefit their reputation or benefit that proof for themselves. And that nothing is on the burden of proof of somebody who just wants to maintain normal human privacy. That would be a wonderful future for Bitcoin. I hope to see it happen. Who knows? But we will continue to build toward that way. And I'm very happy to know that it is in the hands of many brilliant cypherpunks. So we will close this one here. Thank you guys so much for listening. That was Nick Szabo's piece, Confidential Auditing, that you can find on NakamotoInstitute.org. I will link to that, and as always, link to his blog, where you can find, God, I don't know, 100+ different articles and things that he has posted over the years. I just like to go through it and just look at different pieces and do a read here and there. So we're going to constantly revisit Szabo in the future. So stick with us. Don't forget to follow Nick Szabo. That's Nick, S-Z-A-B-O, and the number 4. That's his Twitter tag. I will tag him in the post so he is easy to find. I imagine everyone is following him, but if you are not, what are you doing with your life? And don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy. You can find me on Twitter at that tag, Mastodon, all the different social media links, in the sidebar on cryptoeconomy.life. Oh, wait a second. That might actually not be... Ooh, I may need to update the website. I don't think I actually re-included that in my new sidebar, which I think I mentioned this on the show, but I've got a new look for the website. I've gone with a simpler design while I'm working on a complete redesign in the background. I want it to look cleaner and easier to navigate. So right now, that's what we've got. We got a kind of simpler design that I think will last for the next couple of months while I am doing a lot of work in the background. So don't forget to check out cryptoeconomy.life and dig through the ocean of stuff we have having done in the past. I got more collections and playlists coming out soon, so keep an ear out for that. If you would like to support the show, you can always donate to the address of my Casa node, which is on the cryptoeconomy.life website. And there's also a Lightning tip jar provided by tippin.me, T-I-P-P-I-N.me. Definitely check that out. It is a really, really cool tool, and I'm excited about that as the Casa node guys work out customized invoices so that it's a little bit easier to make use of that with my Casa node. But all the basic wallets all work with it, and it's really simple and seems to work flawlessly, so I'm really excited about that. Definitely check that out. If you want to tip just a little bit of Bitcoin, the best way to do it is to use Lightning, and you can use that tippin.me Lightning tip jar underneath every single post on the website. So check that out. It's a really fun tool and super simple to use. All right, thank you guys so much for listening, and I will catch you next time with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.